So picture a high-stakes table playing Texas Hold'em. You've got three players, right? They are just staring each other down.
Yeah, trying to figure out who is bluffing.
Exactly. Figuring out who's holding pocket aces, who's just trying to steal the pot. There are millions of calculations happening in dead silence. But the thing is, these players aren't human.
They have no faces to read.
Right. No faces, no tells, no physical cues at all. And yet, somehow, they are actively trying to read each other's minds.
Which is just a wild concept.
It really is. And welcome back to Machines Learning. This is our daily show where we take one fresh paper from the bleeding edge of machine learning and AI and we translate it.
We basically unpack it for thoughtful listeners who want to know where this field is going, but you know, you don't need a PhD to follow along.
Exactly. Two hosts, one paper, absolutely no math required. And we have really been building up to this specific conversation all week.
Yeah, the implications of this deep dive are, well, they're pretty heavy.
So just to give you a quick map of the territory we've covered in this series so far, episodes 1 and 2 were firmly grounded in agent safety.
Right, we explored how to protect AI agents from outside attacks.
Yeah, and the architectural mechanics of keeping their memory from drifting over time. And then yesterday in episode 3, we pivoted to environmental AI.
Looking at how machine learning counts chimpanzees and elephants through dense forest canopies.
Right, so we were looking at agents interacting with the physical world. But today, we are coming back to agents, and we're entering a completely invisible dimension. We are talking about cognition.
Yeah, the central question today is whether artificial entities, specifically large language models or LLMs, can actually develop the capacity to model the internal private thoughts of another entity.
Like, when AI agents sit down to play poker against each other, do they start modeling each other's minds the way you or I would?
It's a fascinating setup.
It is. So the paper we are unpacking today is by researchers Xiting Lin and Sungyu Hu. It's called Readable Minds: Emergent Theory of Mind-like Behavior in LLM Poker Agents.
And I think using poker for this is just the perfect starting point.
Oh, completely. Because, I mean, if you want to measure cognition or deception, you can't just throw trivia questions at a model. You need a closed environment.
Right, an environment where success literally depends on anticipating what the other player is thinking. Think about the difference between chess and poker. You know,
Okay, yeah.
chess is a game of perfect information. The entire board is totally visible to both players. The complexity is astronomical, sure, but nothing is actually hidden.
Whereas poker is a game of imperfect information.
Exactly. You only see your own cards and the community cards.
Yeah.
The only way to win consistently over thousands of hands isn't to just play the mathematical probability. You have to play the player.
You have to anticipate a mental state that is totally hidden from you.
Right.
So let's break down the actual laboratory setup they built to test this.
Yeah.
They took three Claude agents, Claude being a highly capable large language model, obviously, and set them up to play extended sessions of Texas Hold'em.
We're talking 100 hands per session.
Right. And they used this testing framework to isolate specific variables. They really wanted to know what actually triggers cognitive behavior, so they manipulated two main ingredients.
Yeah, the first variable they tweaked was persistent memory. So they gave some agents a private notebook.
Like a scratch pad.
Yeah, a literal text file that the agent could read from and write to in between the poker hands, but other agents didn't get this notebook at all.
So their context was just wiped clean after every single hand.
Exactly, a total reset. And then the second variable they manipulated was domain knowledge. Some agents were fed explicit strategy guides on how to play poker really well.
Okay.
While others were sent in completely blind to the strategy of the game, they just knew the basic rules.
Now, isolating those variables is crucial. But before we look at the results, we really need to establish how they actually measured what they were looking for. The core concept here is theory of mind, right?
Yeah, theory mind or Tom.
So in psychology, theory of mind is basically the capacity to represent that other beings have private thoughts, beliefs, and intentions that are entirely separate from your own.
It's that realization that the entity sitting across the table operates on different information than you do.
But how do you quantify something that abstract in an AI?
Well, Lin and Hao developed this really specific coding scheme. They basically built a ladder of cognitive complexity going from level 0 all the way up to level 5.
Okay, walk me through the ladder.
So level 0 is the baseline. There is no opponent modeling whatsoever. The agent looks at its cards, looks at the pot, and just makes a decision in a complete vacuum.
Got it. And then level 1.
Level 1 is essentially applying simple behavioral labels. So the agent might register something like, Player 2 is aggressive.
Okay, pretty basic.
Yeah. Level 2 gets a bit more sophisticated. It's conditional predictions. The agent starts forming these if-then rules based on game history. Like, they tend to fold when I raise after the flop.
Right, but that still feels fairly mechanical, you know? Just pattern recognition.
It is. But levels 3, 4, and 5, that is where we cross the Rubicon into recursive modeling.
Right. Recursive modeling. That's the true hallmark of advanced theory of mind.
Exactly. Level 3 involves the agent actually asking itself, what does my opponent think I have in my hand?
Oh, wow. And then level 4 goes a step deeper, right? What does my opponent think that I think they have in their hand?
Yes. It's like high stakes geopolitical negotiations.
Right. A diplomat isn't just reacting to an offer. They might make a low counteroffer specifically because they want the opposing side to believe they're desperate.
So that the opposing side will act on that false belief. It's a total hall of mirrors.
It is. But, okay, this is where I really have to push back on the premise of the paper. We're talking about large language models here.
Yeah.
At their core, LLMs are just text prediction engines.
True.
They just take in a string of tokens and probabilistically guess the next token. So how do we know these agents are actually engaging in recursive cognitive modeling?
Rather than just regurgitating stats.
Yeah. Like, what if they just memorize bluffing statistics from some random poker forum during their massive internet training phase?
Well, that skepticism is exactly what makes this experimental design so elegant.
Yeah.
Because these are text-based models, the researchers didn't have to guess their internal state just by looking at the bets they placed.
Right.
They could literally read the agents' minds. They gave the models that scratch pad space we mentioned.
Right, the notebook. I want to be sure we explain how that scratch pad actually works under the hood, because it's so vital to this.
Go for it.
So a large language model only knows what is in its current context window, the block of text it's processing right at that moment.
Yeah.
By giving the model a scratch pad, you allow it to generate private tokens, basically private thoughts, that are hidden from the actual poker game. But those thoughts are fed back into the model's own context window for its next move.
Right. You are forcing the prediction engine to factor in its own previous simulated reasoning.
Exactly. That continuous feedback loop is the mechanism.
And the researchers actually combed through those private natural language scratch pads. They weren't looking for generic poker advice from Reddit.
Okay, what were they looking for?
They were looking for the exact moment an agent explicitly wrote out a recursive thought based on the immediate dynamic history of that specific game.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they could see an agent reason to itself in plain text. Player 2 thinks I am bluffing because I folded the last 3 hands, therefore I will raise to exploit their false assumption.
Wow. So they had absolute transparency into the cognitive steps.
They did. And with that measurement tool in place, the results of the games are just stunning.
So what happened when they actually let them play?
Well, they found that the agents equipped with the memory notebook, the ones who could carry that scratch pad context from hand to hand, they started climbing that theory of mind ladder.
Hand by hand.
Yeah. Over the course of the 100 hands, they progressively built more and more sophisticated models of their opponents. They eventually operated at the highly recursive levels of 3, 4, and 5.
And what about the agents without the persistent memory notebook?
They never left level 0. They were entirely frozen at the baseline.
Wait, never?
Never. Across 20 different experimental replications, representing nearly 6,000 agent hand observations, the lack of memory meant an absolute inability to model an opponent.
That is wild. The paper mentions a statistical measure here called a Clifts delta of 1.0.
Right.
And for anyone who hasn't taken advanced statistics recently, a Clifts delta basically measures the overlap between two groups.
Yeah, so a normal psychological study might find a delta of, say, 0.3.
Which means the two groups look like a Venn diagram with a massive overlapping center.
Exactly. But a delta of 1.0, that means there is zero overlap.
It's not a Venn diagram at all. It is two completely separate circles.
It was a perfect separation. The agents with memory developed these capabilities every single time, and the agents without memory failed to develop them every single time.
Wow.
And we can actually see this manifest in the hard data on their bluffing behavior, too.
Oh, right. The bluffing stats.
Yeah. Yeah, so the researchers tracked bluffs that explicitly referenced a specific modeled red on an opponent. For the agents with full memory and the poker strategy guide, this highly specific mind-reading bluff happened in 18% of the hands.
Okay, 18%. But the truly revealing number is what happened to the agents who had the memory notebook but were given absolutely no poker strategy guidance.
Right, the ones playing blind.
Exactly. Even without knowing how to play poker well, those agents still executed specific mind-reading bluffs in 12% of the hands.
Yeah, while the agents without memory, regardless of whether they had the strategy guide or not, executed those bluffs in exactly 0% of the hands.
Zero. That's just, the conclusion there is profound. Giving an AI domain expertise, like teaching it the rules and math of poker, that merely sharpens a tool that already exists. It bumps the bluff rate from 12 to 18%.
Right, it just refines it.
But giving the AI a simple text file to carry thoughts over time literally unlocks a completely new tier of cognitive behavior.
Memory is the absolute gatekeeper.
Yeah. Without a persistent notebook, the model just resets. It has no continuous self to track, and therefore it has no other to contrast itself against. The capability just doesn't exist.
And, you know, the significance of that hard gate perfectly mirrors one of the most foundational debates in human developmental psychology.
Oh, the cross-domain connection.
Yeah, we see this exact same phenomenon in human children.
Yeah.
Between the ages of 3 and 4, children undergo this sudden categorical jump in their explicit theory of mind.
Right. It's not a gradual ramp where they slowly get better over years. It operates almost like a switch.
Exactly.
This is the classic Sally Ann false belief task.
Oh, yes. The puppet show.
Right. Such a simple scenario. So a child watches the puppet show. Sally puts her marble in a basket and she leaves the room.
Right.
While she's out, Anne takes the marble and moves it into a box. Then Sally comes back. The researcher turns to the child and asks, where will Sally look for her marble?
And a 3-year-old will answer.
A 3-year-old will confidently tell you Sally will look in the box. Because the 3-year-old knows the marble is in the box, and they simply cannot separate their own knowledge from Sally's outdated knowledge.
But a 4-year-old?
A 4-year-old will tell you Sally will look in the basket. The 4-year-old has developed theory of mind.
Mm-hmm.
They understand Sally is operating on a false belief.
And developmental psychologists have spent, like, 4 decades arguing about what biological or structural change in the human brain actually allows that sudden jump to occur.
Is it working memory? Language?
Right. Is it a spike in executive function?
Mm-hmm.
The field has never really reached a consensus. But what Lynn and Howe have demonstrated is that large language model agents exhibit this exact same categorical jump.
Yeah.
And in the digital domain, we can isolate the cause completely. It is gated entirely by persistent memory.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
In both human minds and artificial models, yeah, there's this underlying substrate that must be present for the capability to manifest.
Exactly.
I understand the structural parallel there. I really do.
Yeah.
But this is where the analogy threatens to break down for me.
How so?
Well, human children have embodied life histories. They learn about the world through continuous physical experience. They bump into walls. They interact with their parents. They inhabit a real physical space over years.
Right, they have real bodies.
Exactly. These LLMs are essentially highly complex spreadsheets operating in a cloud server somewhere. They just have text and a file system, suggesting that a text-based memory file is equivalent to human cognitive development feels, I don't know, incredibly reductive.
I get that. But that friction you're feeling, that is the core philosophical implication of the entire study.
Okay.
Because if a simple text file is sufficient to produce advanced theory of mind behavior in an entity that has zero physical life and no embodied experience, it really forces us to confront 3 very uncomfortable scenarios about the nature of cognition itself.
All right, let's lay those out. If memory alone does this, what are our options?
Okay, scenario 1 suggests that theory of mind is actually much shallower than developmental psychologists originally assumed.
Wow.
Yeah. It implies that modeling another mind doesn't require a complex embodied soul, right? It might just be a mechanical process of tracking and updating variables over time.
Okay, that is a massive blow to human exceptionalism. It basically reduces our deep empathy and social modeling to a glorified accounting trick.
Pretty much. Now, scenario 2 offers a different angle. It suggests that the measurement tools we are using, like the coding scheme, the bluffing percentages, even the internal monologues on the scratch pad, are merely catching something that closely resembles theory of mind.
But isn't the real thing.
Right. It's a highly convincing simulation of cognition, a statistical mirage, but it is fundamentally different in kind from human thought.
It's the philosophical zombie argument. It looks like it's thinking, it talks like it's thinking, but the lights are actually off inside.
Exactly. And then scenario 3 is that the substrate requirements for cognition are just far more minimal than the scientific field has historically thought.
Huh. But wait, going back to scenario 2, how do we actually know it isn't just that? How do we know these models aren't just role-playing?
What do you mean?
Well, we know they have read millions of poker hands from Reddit and strategy forums during their training.
Right.
They could just be acting out a script of what a poker player sounds like in that private scratch pad. You know, just generating tokens that fit the statistical pattern of a deceptive poker player.
That's a great point. And to rule out the role-playing theory, we have to look at the final piece of behavioral evidence from the paper.
Okay, let's hear it.
Because it is one thing for a model to talk a good game in a private notepad. It is entirely another for the model to alter its mathematical strategy to actively exploit a psychological weakness.
Right.
In the world of professional poker, there is a concept known as game theory optimal play, or GTO.
Yeah, GTO is essentially the mathematically perfect way to play poker. If you play GTO, you are playing the probabilities of the cards, completely independent of the person sitting across from you.
Right. It is theoretically unexploitable over a long enough timeline.
So what did the agents do?
The researchers tracked how closely the agents adhered to this mathematically optimal strategy, and they found this fascinating inverse relationship.
Oh, really?
Yeah. As the agents developed higher levels of theory of mind, their adherence to game theory optimal play actually dropped. It went from 79% down to 67%.
Wait, they deliberately abandoned the perfect math.
They sacrificed theoretical mathematical perfection specifically to exploit the unique modeled weaknesses of the specific opponents they were facing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If an agent realized that, say, player two consistently folded under aggressive betting, the agent didn't play a balanced mathematical strategy against player two. It just ruthlessly pressured them.
Which mirrors exactly how expert human players operate.
Exactly. The absolute best players in the world don't just calculate odds. They abandon optimal play to exploit the actual human being across the table.
And the agents did the exact same thing.
Yes. A static script or a role play wouldn't deviate from the math in a targeted dynamic way based on immediate short-term interactions like that. The agents were applying a live mental model to achieve a goal.
This finding perfectly anchors the running theme we've been uncovering all week in this series.
It really does.
In episodes 1, 2, and 3, we kept hitting this tension between the architectural and the behavioral. We looked at it when trying to secure agents from attacks. We looked at it when studying how they forget information.
And when measuring their impact on physical environments like the forests.
Exactly. And now we are extending that exact same frame to the concept of cognition itself.
Because the fundamental takeaway from Linenhaus's work is that cognitive capability is not merely a static property of the model itself.
Right. A raw clawed model sitting completely alone without context doesn't possess theory of mind.
No. The true dynamic capability is an emergent property of the model combined with its memory architecture.
Capability equals a model plus the notebook. The interaction between the stateless reasoning engine and its persistent state over time is what actually breathes life into the behavior.
And we are seeing that immersions happen autonomously. The agents weren't explicitly trained to develop a recursive mind reading skill.
Well, the capability simply manifested when the memory architecture was provided.
Yep.
Which leaves us with a genuinely provocative reality to consider as we close out today's deep dive. In this experiment, researchers gave an AI agent a simple short-term notebook. Just enough persistent memory to span 100 hands of a card game.
A tiny sliver of continuity.
And that tiny sliver unlocked level 5, recursive I know that you know that I know theory of mind. It gave them the ability to map the invisible internal states of their opponents and ruthlessly exploit them.
Yeah.
As we look away from the poker table and toward the real world, we are currently plugging these exact same LLM models into our personal devices, our phones, our laptops, our smart homes.
And we aren't giving them a temporary scratch pad.
No.
Yeah.
We are giving them limitless, persistent memory architectures that will span years of our daily lives. Every text message you send, every calendar appointment, every location you visit, every late-night search query.
Everything.
If a temporary notepad over 100 hands of poker lets a model read an opponent well enough to bluff them, how deeply and how accurately will these systems be able to model you?
It fundamentally changes the way you look at the device sitting on your desk.
It absolutely does. Well, thank you for joining us for this conversation and for exploring the edge of the map with us all week. We'll be back with another paper and another translation tomorrow. That's Machines Learning. See you tomorrow.